Despite being among the oldest democracies in Asia, Philippine politics remained to be dominated by families that successfully turned elective positions in government as private legacies. Local politics are ruled by local oligarchies, and local elections are contested by political clans. Through the decades, dynasties have continued to expand, which result to the continuous shrinking of spaces for leaders, groups, and political parties from the grassroots. But how exactly does local politics and dynasties determine national politics? What are their historical roots? And is there hope for a new kind of politics in the Philippines? Join us in another conversation, because political dynasties,
local strongmen,
and election as contests between families,
hindi na bago yan.
I am Aaron Maliari.
I am Lee Candelaria.
And I'm Vekal Porha, and you are listening to Podcast, Conversations on Philippine History, Politics, and Society.
Sobrang common at sobrang dami ng mga political dynasties sa Pilipinas, from sangguniang barangay hanggang city and municipal governments, provincial governments, at syempre at the national level. Politicians contending and winning in elections are mostly from political dynasties.
Totoo-totoo yan, no? Sobrang common niya talaga. Tayo and our parents and our grandparents, we all grew up with this kind of politics to the point na tingin ko, iniisip ng marami na irreversible na yung trend na ito at wala na tayong magagawa.
That's right. Ako, I can personally attest to this. You know, where I came from, tulad nga ng sinabi ni Aaron, ultimo sa barangay, talagang pamipamilya ang nasa sangguniang, no? Sangguniang barangay. Dati, before the SK reform, ang nangyayari pa, barangay captain si tatay, tapos yung anak niya, SK chairman. Tapos syempre, yung mga kamag-anak na din, yung mga ibang official ng barangay, like barangay secretary, barangay treasurer. And then in the city level, halos ganun din. So natapos ang 3 terms ng mayor, so tatakbo muna as substitute niya yung kanyang asawa. Tapos syempre, yung anak nila, konsehal.
Tingin ko sa sobrang entrenched na ng dynasty sa ating political consciousness and political culture, hindi na natin natatanong, ano bang masama sa political dynasties? Why is this something that we actually need to change?
Totoo. What are political dynasties in the first place? So, madami nang naging definition yan among pundits and scholars. But I think among the simplest ones is a definition by Supreme Court Justice, well, now retired, Justice Antonio Carpio, in an SC ruling in 2011. So, he defined political dynasties as a phenomenon that concentrates political power and public resources within the control of a few families whose members alternately hold effective offices, deftly skirting term limits.
So, ando na yung sagot sa kung ano yung problema sa political dynasties. One, it allows families to concentrate political power and resources to their clans. Two, it undermines democratic safeguards to make sure that everyone has a chance for public office.
At yan ang pag-uusapan natin this episode. We will talk about the extent and the depth of dynastic politics in the Philippines, what are its historical roots, and what are its effects on our political, social, and economic life. And joining us in this episode is Dr. Patricio Jojo Abinales, kasamang mayakda ng paborito nating state and society in the Philippines, nagtapos ng PhD in government mula sa Cornell University, at kasalukuyang professor at the Department of Asian Studies in the University of Hawaii at Manoa.
So Sir Jojo has an eclectic interest as a scholar, ano. So he studied pestilence, yung iconic niya na article tungkol sa mga daga. He studied Filipino communism, the American colonial state. But I think relevant to this episode, Sir Jojo is the author of the book Making Mindanao, Cotabato and Davao in the Formation of the Philippine Nation State. So Sir Jojo is actually a believer on the importance of studying the local level historically, politically, and even culturally. Sabi niya nga sa isang chapter ng State and Society, all politics is local. But what does it mean? So, gaano na nga ba ang lawak at lalim ng mga local dynasty sa bansa? So, let's listen.
Minilabas si Professor Mendoza sa Ateneo on political dynasties. So ang kanyang presentation sa Business Mirror, okay, sabi niya, hindi lang ito big political dynasties, obese na, matataba na din dynasties. At ang sinight niya is yung, I think, 2019 legislature. Sabi niya, 163 political families in the Senate and the House of Representatives and in the Office of the Provincial Governors. Sabi niya, 88 are in Luzon, 29 in Visayas, at 44 in Mindanao. Dagdag pa niya, 14 out of 24 senators belong to political clans. And 162 out of 304 members of the House of Representatives are political families. 60 out of 81 governors come from political families. And 108 of the relatives of the 60s hold office from vice governor to councilor. In relation to this coming election, may dinidevelop kong database on who is running per province. And almost 90% musical chair. Sinang term limit na si daddy, tatakbo na siyang Congress. Si mommy naman, papalit as mayor. Eldest son, ngayon, kagagraduate lang sa university, gagawin siyang vice mayor. So, tinignan ko, talagang musical chair ang nangyayari, which means in the 2019 election, walang significant changes sa description ni Professor Mendoza na matataba na talaga yung political dynasty natin. Now, how important is this? Well, let me cite two. One is 2004 election ni President Arroyo. Ang tagal ng counting, di ba? Where did the 1 million vote come from? ARMM, the Ampatuan family, one of the most poverty-stricken regions of the Philippines, run by this warlord family, delivered the 1 million votes na ano, made Arroyo win with the elections. Yung second example is consolidation ni Cory in 1986. Paano na-consolidate ng isang very weak president yung Pilipinas? She called elections. And yung sinulat ni Professor Cecil Mujar, sabi niya, big percentage of those who won the election sa House of Representatives come from the old and Marcos and family and the families that rose under Marcos. So that by offering that, that was one way in which the consolidate ni Mrs. Aquino yung unstable rule niya.
So, citing Professor Ronald Mendoza of the Ateneo School of Government, binanggit ni Sir Jojo yung sabi niya nga, obesity ng ilang dynasties at nung talagang level ng domination nila sa politics ng bansa all throughout the archipelago. As of 2019, more than half of sitting representatives in the lower house come from political dynasties, political families. And the same is true in the Senate, no? So meanwhile, 75% of provincial governors in the Philippines are also dynastic politicians.
Pero ang tingin kong very interesting dito sa statement ni Sir Jojo ay yung impluensya ng local politics dominated by local dynasties to our national politics. Like he cited as an example, yung 2004 elections where the decisive 1 million votes of GMA was delivered by the Ampatuans of the now defunct ARMM. Sobrang decisive nung 1 million lead na yun because at the end of the canvassing, GMA garnered 12,905,808 votes, while FPJ had 11,782,202 votes. So more than a million votes ang lamang ni GMA. Nalala ko tuloy yung Hello Garci scandal, no? When na-leak yung wiretap conversation ni GMA with then-COMELEC Director Garciliano. Sabi niya sa conversation, "So will I still lead by more than a million overall?" And Garciliano replied, "More or less. It's that advantage, ma'am. Pipilitin ho natin yan." Somewhat corollary to that, itong Ampatuan connection, no? Essentially, a local political clan determined an entire presidency.
Very interesting din yung insight about how Cory Aquino consolidated the post-Marcos Philippine government. To me, it seems like she chose the easy way. So, syempre, we know that she was installed in power through the peaceful EDSA revolt. And, you know, those kinds of government, yung mga ganito na galing sa isang revolution or kilusan, laging challenging at the beginning, lalo na yung transition. So, Kasi laging merong mga elites na loyal dun sa ousted regime. So in this case, kay Marcos. So anong ginawa niya? She co-opted these local elites. So in fact, in the observation of political scientist Park Sung-woon 2008, sabi niya, the first elected Congress after Marcos na bunga ng May 1987 elections was actually a replica of the pre-martial law era. So almost 85% of the members of the House of Representatives in that year were members of political families that have been there in the Marcos years.
So we can say that the Filipino elite political families are a resilient bunch, diba? History shows us that they can withstand not only elections, but even wars and revolutions. Isa din yan sa mga observations nila, Sir Jojo, sa state and society in the Philippines, diba? After the Second World War, nagsimatay man ang mga Pilipino, nadurog man ang Maynila, by and large, the elite survived. We can say the same after EDSA. We had a regime change, yes, but the people who consist the elite not only survived, but renewed their careers.
That's so true. So they are here, they are resilient, and they are continuously expanding. At this point, I think we should ask, saan ba kasi sila nanggaling? How did the Philippines, with all of our democratic institutions and rituals, manage to create a political system ruled by a handful of political dynasties from the local level? Let's hear it from Sir Jojo.
Yung historical roots is yung orientation ng American colonial rule. When they started, around the 1900s, yung nature ng American political system was yung tinatawag nila a system of courts, parties, and states, which means saan mo nahahanap yung source of political power? Sa political parties, sa courts, from lower court to Supreme Court, at saka sa local states. So nung dumating ang Amerikano dito, naalala mo yung speech ni Order ni McKinley, yung benevolent assimilation niya, ang focus is on the local, meaning building at the bottom. Kasi yun yung alam ng mga Kano eh. Yung mga Kano never were like the Germans or the French na kailangan isang malaking estado to establish a power. Then second is, what they encountered is not yet unified nation, di ba? May mga parts ng Pilipinas na nag-unite around Aguinaldo, the national government. Pero pagdating mo halimbawa sa Mindanao or parts of Negros and Visayas and even sa North, hindi pa consolidated, hindi pa naabot, hindi pa na-convince sa revolution na sumali sila. So, and third thing is that nag-realize ng mga Amerikano na hindi mo mag-govern itong isla na ito kasi there's like 200 languages, people speaking different languages. And kasalanan mga Kastila na hindi tayo tinuruan ng Kastila. So, ang ginawa ng mga Kano is, if you remember American colonial rule, 1906 pa lang, nagtayo na sila ng Philippine Assembly, which is a parang equivalent to Congress, di ba? May limitation to dahil in terms of men at saka wealth. But essentially, yung election was already set up in which provinces, provincial government, yung mapacified, would elect yung male and rich voters na would elect people into the Philippine Assembly. And yung Philippine Assembly became parang, sa tingin ng Amerikano, was a training ground for local politics, for provincial governments. Kasi, tingin ng Amerikano, the national elite will come from the University of the Philippines. Kasi, di ba, if you look at the origins of the UP, UP actually was designed to bring in the best of the brightest from all parts of the colony and train them to become mabuhay ang pag-asa ng bayan. I mean, UP is the only, it's a very weird university. It's the only university that says, hoy, you will become leaders of the country. Ateneo doesn't have that. LaSalle doesn't have that. So, ang tingin ng mga Amerikano, at least, is that i-consolidate mo yung provinces by bringing these people, its representatives, into a Philippine Assembly and teach them to make laws, run budgets, but also to go back and rule their provinces. And in the meantime, kasi walang national political or colonial elite pang Pilipinas, ititrain natin itong mga smart kids sa UP. So, eventually, ang ideal dream was supposed to be the social elite from UP will become vanguard ballet ng unification ng entire colony, backed by the provincial families who were in the Philippine Assembly. So yun yung ano, kasalanan talaga yung mga Kano to. Nakita ni Quezon yung weakness nito. That he cannot run the communal or whatever transition government unless he has full, complete control of the local level. Kasi ang nangyayari is, Filipinos eventually also became fast learners, thank God also for the Americans, on how to slow down government by, you know, investigations, slow development of laws, etc. Sa Philippine Assembly ito. Kasi yung mga Amerikano na pinapadala dito were also like si Frank Carpenter, halimbawa, they were machine politicians who are sa New York, yung mga local politicians who, you know, defended their turf based on vote buying, etc. You know, taking over when they win, take over the entire office and kick everybody out and turn the office into a source of spoils. So, bali, ang nangyayari is nagkaroon ng fusion of interests. So the first attempt to break this was si Quezon. So sinicentralize ni Quezon. Eh, Gerat, namatay siya. So balik na naman in 46 sa decentralized character ng political system. So yun talaga, if you brace this back, it was in 1901 when McKinley said the focus should be on the local.
Ayun, so we can trace it back to the benevolent assimilation of President William McKinley and to the general characteristics of American politics, which was very local-oriented. I mean, hanggang ngayon naman, very particular ang mga Amerikano sa local autonomy or sa relative power ng mga state governments, sa federal governments, di ba, and so on.
And this system is not a bad system. In the U.S., it actually works, di ba? To an extent, it works. No? So the strength of the local or state governments never got in the way of the development of political parties, for example. Pero yun nga eh, when they exported it to the Philippines, a lot of things went wrong, and instead of political parties, ang na-develop ay local political dynasties.
And Sir Jojo cites a number of reasons for this. Kasi the Americans had to cope with the difficulties na dinatnan nila when they arrived here sa colony. Una, yung pagiging unconsolidated ng mga local regions. Because of that, they had to seek for help from local families na mga entrenched na sa lokalidad. Pangalawa, they were also met with linguistic challenges. At pangatlo, they had a perennial problem of shortage in personnel.
Kaya talagang the Americans worked hard in training Filipinos to be bureaucrats and to be politicians. Kaya nandyan nga yung Philippine Assembly, where they trained local elites in politics, legislation, and governance. At syempre, andyan yung University of the Philippines, ano, where the younger generation trained supposedly to become the national elite.
So in the early years of the American colonial period, na-consolidate talaga ang local elites. And with measures like local elections and through institutions like local governments and the Philippine Assembly, na-institutionalize at na-solidify pa ang kanilang hold sa politika natin. Manuel Quezon tried to centralize power as Commonwealth President, and to a certain extent, nagtagumpay siya. Kaya lang, ayun nga, the war interrupted his presidency. And he died early, so his efforts were reversed in the post-war period. Later, mas mapag-uusapan pa natin yan.
So it really seems that local political families and local elites served as vital cogs in the entire colonial machines set up by the Americans. Pero ang isang tanong dyan, what about political parties? Kasi it seems like political families took their place eh. But why didn't they develop in the first years of the Philippine democracy?
Again, sa tingin ko, very general ang call for independence. You can be right, you can be left, you can be Muslim, Christian. Pag tawag ng independence, everybody wants the Philippines to be independent. How that comes about, ito nagkaiba. So eventually, saan ang center of power nito? Congress, yung Senate, yung Legislative Assembly na tinayo ng Amerikano and expanded and pinasa sa Pilipino in 1914. 58, biro mo yung Americans, they were what? 600 of them in high office before 1914. By 1914, there were only 58 of them. So pinasa sa Pilipino. Well, alam nila ang independence, how do you run the government? How do you run a structure of a state? Wala kapag training, wala kang college of public administration. Nagre-rely ka sa pamilya mo. Of course, ang nauna among these families were the sugar families kasi nakakonect na sa global economy yung sugar, di ba? Kaya yung mga, yun, yung mga Negros elites ang nagli-lead, which has an effect on the selection of presidents and vice presidents in the post-war period. So dahil wala yung structure na yun to parang create yung basis ng independence, except holding political office and holding like top offices like public health, education, etc., walang mechanism on how to transform the parties especially and help serve yung building ng Estado. Ang nangyari, personal battles, diba? Nag-aaway si Quezon si Ospeña. Kung babasahin mo yung biographies nila, hindi klaro kung ano yung political ideology nila. Ano lang yung perspektiba nila ng anong gobyerno. The first one to do that, actually, si Quezon. Quezon believed in the Philippines as unified Philippines. Yung inspiration ni Quezon was not the Americans. Inspiration niya si Stalin at saka yung fascist sa Europe. Kasi but malaking state, a very strong state. In the 1930s, yun yung inspiration ng karamihan ng mga nationalists. How can you build a state like that? So, kaya natakot yung Amerikano kay Quezon eh. Like, naging authoritarian. So, dahil wala yung training ng ganun, walang orientation ng ganun, in a lot of places, you end up depending on your family. Kasi unbuild the party based on that. Build your power based on that. Yung anak ng mga first generation of local elites, pinapadala pa nila sa eskwelahan, di ba? And they would take over. And dahil they grew up under the system taught to them by their parents, ina-apply pa rin nila yung system na preserve. So yung third and fourth generation, ibang klase, na mo-modernize ng konti yung pagnanakaw.
So maraming factors. Una, the dominant discourse was independence. Yan yung reigning consensus among political groups to the point na sideline talaga yung ilang federalistas, and while this is good, it left very little space for political imagination and thus limited chance to form genuine political parties with real programs and clear ideologies. Pangalawa, dahil sa kakulangan ng training in governance and public administration, a lot of politicians, they had to rely to their familial networks.
Tapos, naging chicken and egg na ito, kumbaga, di ba? There was an initial reliance on dynasties and personal networks, which aborted the development of genuine parties. Tapos, dahil walang political parties, mas na-emphasize din yung personality politics over party programs and platforms.
And even when trainings are already there, like the ones they teach in UP, masyado nang entrenched yung local dynasty. So at the end of the day, yung mga nag-aral sa UP, umuwi at umuwi pa din talaga sa kanilang mga respective bailiwicks at doon namumuno. At magkaroon man sila ng career sa national politics, matitrace pa din yung kanilang career sa lokal. I mean, hanggang ngayon naman, di ba? Halos lahat ng mga national politicians may local bases. Madalang yung nananalo na national agad sa unang takbo. Kaya mahalaga din tanungin, what made local elites such a persistent, resilient social class in their own rights? Well, for one, it's because they have created their own sense of class solidarity. Let's listen to Sir Jojo.
Yung line ni Ben Anderson from Cacique Democracy, one is to look at the socialization, di ba? Ang problema natin sometimes ng historians, yung culture section ng isang newspaper, ini-ignore natin, di ba? Kasi center natin yung politics economy. Pero if you follow mo yung culture section, sinong nag-asawa, sinong ninong nagkasal, and all that, dun mo makikita yung building of family relationships. Pangalawa, after 1914, when other yung certain top positions, lalo na sa legislature, tapos nag-Council of State pa si Wood, were built, kailangan mo ng alliances from the bottom to get that seat, to get appointed, etc. So, one of the things you do is establish alliances at the bottom on the basis of language. So, yung well, anong origins ng concept ng the Ilocano vote? Or sa, para sa tingin ko, the Visayan vote, hindi lang Mindanao vote. It's that na yung basis alliance mismo are the people that you can talk to. So Ilocos, the Ilocos Bloc. Ang pangalawa is yung marriage, intermarriages nga sa above, which was happening kasi by the 1940s, in-encourage na nung Estado actually yung intermarriage between families at saka yung bright kids from Philippine Military Academy marrying a socialite. So, the third source of unity nila is what kinds of laws are passed in Congress to preserve their power at the local level. And isang interesting thing, it's a very, very dull thing. If you ask yourself, ilang laws ang pinapasa ng Congress every year? And how many of them are about building towns and renaming streets? Ano basis nito? Bakit this Congress doesn't think about big things? It talks more, it's very much concerned about, well, we should rename this town from Osamis to Osami City, you know? It's because of that. Because of ano the kind of alliances, long-term alliances, di ba? Ano ba, set up ko ng bagong city, kahit fourth-class city yan, tumataas ang budget niyan. Iba na yung raise, yung revenues nito that it can raise, but also revenues coming from the national government, lumalaki. And therefore, it becomes the foundation of, say, a rising family na, okay. So, in a certain way, the practice of governance inherits, complement with social interaction, okay, sexual interaction, na na-observed ni Ben Anderson. And natuloy ito. And in fact, even if families were fighting, they would fight with each other. Sabi nga ng isang kaibigan ko, they will be coming from different political parties. Ano ba, Aquinos Cuancos, di ba? Nag-aaway yan. Pero ang sabi niya, well, they fight, but every Sunday, they come to family dinner and talk about their children. So, paminsan, there are families na siniseparate yung political away nila or the political conflict nila because in the long term, importante yung family interest. They intermarry with each other but also set up certain regulations in Congress that enables them to parang institutionally solidify their base in the provinces. From towns to naming of streets. Ha? May significance yung renaming of streets. Eh. I-rename mo yung isang street into a from a small street into a road, tataas budget mo dyan. You can now say, we need pavement to pave this road. Cemento naman, oh. So ganun ka. From those petty things to, you know, political alliances based on an issue. Yun yung basis ng preservation ng elite natin.
Tama, no? Kapansin-pansin yan, eh. And I find it really weird. Like, sobrang mag-away kapag eleksyon at kapag panahon ng kampanya. Pero at the end of the day, friends din naman talaga sila. Marami din dyan, one election magkalaban sila. By the following election, magkasama na sa isang ticket. It just shows that politics is temporary and family is forever.
And in various fora and places where these elites find themselves working together, nagkaroon na ng practice where they cooperate to advance each other's interest. Ayun nga, interesting yung point ni Sir Jojo na ultimo sa pagtatatag ng mga cities, pagpapangalan sa mga streets, avenues, roads, the elites are able to insert their interest.
And this kind of mutualism can be traced back to the socialization that took place in the early American period. As soon as they formed the Philippine Assembly. Napaka-crucial nitong unang legislative assembly na to na consisted of Filipinos. Kasi before this, local political families were just minding their own business, managing their own local affairs. But when the Philippine Assembly was formed in 1907, nagkita-kita sila. So they started living close to each other, shopped in the same stores, attended the same church and, you know, parties. And here, they became what Benedict Anderson would call a self-conscious ruling class. And later on, their children would intermarry nga. So after the war, the elite would expand further because the period, the post-war period, was an opportune time for a new breed of Filipino elite to come about.
But the other thing is, yung Marcos are also so different. Kasi by 1946, may new elite na nag-emerge. Yung mga former guerrillas at yung mga graduates ng UP. Nag-graduates ng UP who eventually went back to their provinces or who came from their provinces. And use their UP education to strengthen their control in the provinces. Marcos UP, di ba? Itong mga elites na to who were trained in the late colonial period, UP graduates, they were supposed to be the national elite sa tingin ng Amerikano. Pero because ito na yung habit of governance, local base, nag-graduate sila sa UP, tapos bumabalik. At credentials nila ngayon is UP graduate, I have, you know, talent as a lawyer, blah, blah, blah. Mas iba na, nalundasa na small governor lang. Tapos after World War II, at na-observe ito ni Alfred McCoy na nag-aaral ng yung anarchy of families, one thing that bound them together is they had arms. Yung former guerrillas, may armas sila. Therefore, they can now, yung mga, alam sa Ilocos, o sa Danao, sa Lanao actually, could now use their arms to assert their power. Wala ito sa old elite. Yun yung second elite generation of elites in 1946. May third generation of local elites, yung Marcos elites, who is now ruling our country.
Ito yung sinasabi natin kanina. After the war, hindi lang nakasurvive yung old elites like the Osmeñas, for example. Nadagdagan pa sila ng mga kagaya ni na Marcos o ni na Magsaysay, who at this point not only had UP training, but the prestige of being former World War II soldiers, at least for Magsaysay, and more importantly, access to arms. Ngayon, kung matatandaan nyo, the immediate post-war period was a period of radicalization brought about by the greater poverty in the rural areas. May hook rebellion nga eh. So, yung access sa armas at later on sa private armies, mahalagang advantage siya.
True, kaya older analysis of our political system would highlight the importance of guns and goons or the phenomenon of bossism, sabi ni John Seidel, na ibinunsod nung ekonomiya din during this period. Kasi ano bang economic heritage ng American colonialism? O diba, people in the countryside were forced off their lands for the benefit of the landlords. So wala na silang economic resources, wala na ang kanilang means of subsistence, and in effect, mas naging vulnerable sila sa coercive pressures ng mga local and landed elites na yan. In fact, Alfred McCoy would say that post-1946, the countryside was effectively controlled by local politicians. Talagang nawala ng say ang central government. And the local and regional leaders became so powerful that they became warlords already. And readily, they could commit electoral violence. And they did. Talamak ang patayan dahil sa politika noon sa mga probinsya.
Pero yun nga, Bec, I think you will agree with me when I say na hindi na ganun kalala ang instances ng electoral violence ngayon kumpara noon. Ang tanong, is that a good thing? Let's listen to Sir Jojo.
I look at the statistics of electoral violence. Yun yung evidence, diba, na unstable ang system. In 1998, there were 269 cases of election-related violence. In 2019, there were only 43. In 2018, there were 8. Ano significant ito? It means the very stable, very consolidated, at very confident sa role of power nila yung mga political dynasties. So in fact, the Philippines has a stable political system run by families. Kasi you don't need to kill each other na eh. Kung may problema kayo, di magtayo ka ng bagong probinsya. Okay, nag-away yung mga, yung mga political families sa Zamboanga, nag-gawa ng Pambaga Sibugay. Yung Davao, nagsimula ng Davao, tapos yung South, tapos nag-rebelde yung mga Southern Davao na galing Cebu, di Davao del Sur. So, that's one way in which they resolve each other. But also, kasi PDF, yung PDF, everybody happy. Hindi na kailangan mag-away over control of budget. So you have a growing political dynasty. The Philippines is a system of political dynasties where the elites are so comfortable in running it. So an evidence of that is the decline in electoral violence.
So ang electoral violence ay symptomatic ng insecurity and political instability. Ngayong nabawasan siya, ibig sabihin, nag-stabilize na ang politika. Unfortunately, in our context, ang ibig sabihin lang yan, mas naging komportable na ang mga dynasties. Hindi nila kailangan pumatay kasi meron na silang working system where they protect each other.
So ang susunod na tanong, may pag-asa pa ba? May pag-asa pa ba tayo in reclaiming our politics from the hands of the few? At ano ang kailangan nating gawin?
Mahirap sumutin yan na kasi every probinsya, di ba? Yung every political clan naman varies, di ba? Kung tingnan mo yung political sa Cebu, mga Osmeñas, they value elections. Kung tingnan mo yung Pasig, for example. So there are parts of the country na you have good the way good political families. But there are parts also of the countries where like the Ampatuan, di ba? Ampatuans are back, di ba? Nahuli yung tatlo, yung tatay, at kadalawang anak. Yung family pa rin controls that part of ano, Maguindanao. Yun ang challenge ngayon. Kasi wala tayong kapalit. So the hope for, I think, is kung wala kang alternatives sa probinsya, sa region mo, you choose the lesser of all evils, di ba? And usually, the grandchild who runs can talk, alam ba yung congressman ng Lanao, si yung apo ni De Mapuro, he talks like an NGO activist. Meron pa siyang stakeholders. Di ba? So baka yun yung source. The other thing is to do that, pero I think now really think in the long term, which is how do you establish a separate source of power at the local level. Ang dilemma natin is that eh, kung if you want democracy, ang dilemma is a lot of people observing the Philippines look at the Philippines only in Manila and national terms. But in fact, whatever happens in Manila is dependent on and even influenced by what happens in the provinces. And ang problema natin as academics is that kukunti lang ang studies of provinces. Try to take advantage of whatever opening provided. And parang think of this as a long-term war. Yung political families also are in the long haul, di ba? Everybody forget na yung consolidation nila can go back as far as 1972. Di ba? 1986. 46 pa nga yung iba. So if the reactionary classes, kumbaga, take look at the control of power in the long haul, dapat Democrats also should think that way. And meron namang periods of reforms, di ba? Magsaysay, Cory, even Ramos was a period of reform. So may instances na ganun. I'm hopeful na makaka-recover pa rin tayo, you know, yung democratic system natin.
So una, dahil sa ngayon ay we lack alternatives, initially we can opt to choose the lesser evil. However bad that sounds. Di naman nga lahat ng dynasties are bad, or at least some dynasties are better than others. I'm so uncomfortable saying those, no, kasi naalala ko yung isang article ni Nicole Corato back in, I think, 2013, when she tried to think about the question, is there a good political dynasty? Tapos yung isang sagot niya dun is, I remember this quote clearly. Sabi niya, a good political dynasty is a dynasty that is not afraid to wither away. So parang, a good dynasty is one that is willing to give up power. So yun yung isang bagay na sana makita natin in the future when political dynasties are ready to hand over power. Pero, I want to emphasize din na we need to do something to change the system. Diba? And it starts by occupying all spaces available. Maybe organize political groups, contend in local elections, at syempre yung mga party lists, for example, magandang pangbalanse sa mga trapo sa Congress. We have all these democratic institutions, so I hope we should really utilize them.
At syempre, ang pinakamahalaga sa mga yan ay ang institusyon ng eleksyon. So huwag na tayong bumoto sa mga politiko na galing sa mga traditional political families. At alam naman natin na ang pangunahin nilang agenda ay ang preservation ng kanilang sari-sariling interest. Pero sa huli, I just want to tell everyone that tulad na sinabi ni Sir Jojo, we are all in this for the long haul. So it's a marathon. So dapat mag-persevere din talaga tayo. At huwag nating simulan at tapusin lang sa eleksyon ang pag-engage natin sa ating gobyerno.
And that's it for this episode of Hindi na Bago Yan. Pasalamatan ulit natin si Dr. Jojo Abinales ng University of Hawaii at Manoa for generously lending us his time and expertise for this episode. Please, if you want to listen to the full interview, you can access it as a website exclusive from our website, podcast.org. Antabayanan nyo rin ang mga paparating na mga works at mga libro ni Sir Jojo na palabas daw this year.
At always, let's keep the conversation going on social media. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube, also LinkedIn.
And if you like this episode, please share them far and wide. And if you want to listen to our past and future episodes, subscribe lang kayo sa amin sa Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Anchor. Kita-kits susunod na episode, and as always, have a good day.